ended up with this weird kind of throat tickle, dry cough that I don't feel bad. It's just, I just start coughing, and I kept me up all last night. And so today I went in and got a Celestone shot because, like I said, I want to get over this quick. And so now I'm a little bit coffee and a little bit wired up and a little bit tired and a little bit, I don't know what. I'm all kind of a mixture of things. So, and it's a good night for it too, because this is a good text that we're talking through tonight. There's nudity. There's exorcisms. There's demons. Bacon. Pre-bacon. But there's just all the makings of a good biblical story happening tonight. So, Toby, who's not here, but who I was communicating with before the service, completely called me out on something. I'm trying to figure out what it means for me, and that's this. He said, "So what's your basic theme?" And I gave him a couple sentences that kind of talked about what I was going to talk about, because he helps kind of select the music sometimes, even if he can't be here. And he said, "Oh, so you're talking about the demoniac who was, you know, healed by Jesus when he went over to the..." And I was like, "Yeah, how do you know I was talking about that text?" He said, "Oh, man, I really like that sermon a lot." I was like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, you know, when we went through Luke last time..." Now, look, I went back in my notes. That's 2008, by the way. And I went back, and I try not to rehash kind of sermons. I'm not kind of into that. I like looking at things new. And I'm telling you, I basically rewrote the exact same sermon I did in 2008. So that means one of two things: either I have no original thoughts, or I still don't get it, and God is trying to teach it to me still. Probably both. All of the above is the situation. So, I'm going to be honest, I pretty much wrote the exact same sermon I did back in 2008, but obviously I need to hear it again, if nothing else. And in this text, in the lectionary, we're starting to kind of skip around Luke a little bit. There's a couple of weeks where we were kind of doing one story than the next. Lectionary takes us to Luke 8, and it's right after a very important story that I kind of wish they would tell in order, but that's just not the way lectionary does it. So, and that is the story of kind of Jesus being out on the water with the disciples and calming the storm, and the disciples not really knowing what to do with this guy who can do that, and saying, "Who is this?" And, you know, it's kind of an important moment where the disciples are seeing things about Jesus they can't quite explain, and they haven't quite come to the full realization. As you know, if you read the Gospels, the disciples were not, on the ball with everything. It took them a while to really get their minds and hearts around who Jesus was. And so, it ends with this kind of thing of the disciples going, like, "Who is this?" Right? Which is kind of an important setup, because what happens in this story is the very first thing is you find the most unlikely and unattractive person, maybe and possibly in Scripture, who immediately knows who Jesus is. it's just a thing Luke does all the time. Like, everyone that's supposed to get it doesn't get it. Everyone that's not supposed to get it does. Everyone who's supposed to be out is in, and in is out. I mean, Luke just likes to kind of throw things on its head and show kind of Jesus in an upside down way. And so it's a great story. Got a lot of things going on here. I'll try to get through it in a way that does it justice, but also doesn't keep us here too long. But luckily, again, with that shot, I feel like I can micro machine man this thing. I feel like I can probably get through five pages in about 3 minutes. So we should be good. So Luke 8, starting in verse 26, it says this. It says, "They," it's Jesus and the disciples, "sailed to the region of the Gerasenes, which is across the lake from Galilee." Period. There, nothing significant really necessarily about this city. In fact, if when you go back and you read kind of the archaeology and all that kind of stuff, it's they don't really know where this was. There's not kind of enough in what they have now to really figure out exactly where it was. The main important thing to realize, at least in the overarching story in Luke, is this is the first time that Jesus takes his disciples and they go out to a purely Gentile area. Okay, it's not just that having an encounter with a Gentile in kind of a Jewish territory in the area of God's people. He is going out and to some place. This is the first time in Luke that he's doing this, right? So it's a very clear picture of what's going to come in Luke and Acts here. So he goes to this, previously all Jesus' work was done in kind of Jewish areas who were waiting for a Messiah. Verse 27, "When Jesus stepped ashore, he was met by a demon-possessed man from the town. A long time this man had not worn clothes or lived in a house, but had lived in the tombs." Right, so as soon as he steps up on the shore, he's greeted by a naked man living among the gravesite. This is disconcerting if you're Jesus and the disciples. I don't know if you've ever been greeted in a new town by a naked man. But I was not too long ago in Washington, D.C., when I was walking with my friend, and we were going to meet someone for dinner. It was kind of a nice part of town. It was dinner I didn't have to pay for. I was very excited about. And we were walking down the street, and as we're walking, very main kind of business district just in Washington, D.C., there's a guy walking this way, and just immediately, even from a distance, I couldn't really put anything together, but I just kind of, something didn't quite seem right. And as we got closer, and I thought, okay, he's not wearing a shirt, and it's kind of cold out here. And then I was looking, and then he got a little closer, and I said, "Hey," he goes, "Yeah." I said, "That guy's totally naked. That guy's completely, not no socks, not a bow tie, nothing, naked." just walking down the street. And as he passed us, he just said, "Sometimes you just want to be naked," is what he said when he was walking by. God's on the street, you know. And which is true. I mean, in and of itself, that is very true. Just ask my daughter. She's constantly doing it around the house right now. She's 2, not like 18 or something, for those who don't know me. But it's legal. And I mean, it's one of the, it's like the most jarring thing. You know, you're just not ready for that. If you're part of the tourism board for the Garrisons, this is not the first impression you want to be making of your town when people come to visit, right? So this guy comes out, he is stark naked, and it says he is possessed by demons, right? So he is, what the effects of that mean for him is that he is homeless, naked Gentile who's living among the tombs, right? Now, if you are a Jewish visitor to an area, this really is about the worst case scenario you can have. Really, the only thing that could be maybe one step worse would be if it was a female, right? Because the kind of the patriarchy and male-female kind of things are going on here. But he's naked and he's dirty. He's literally and ritually unclean by all Jewish standards. He is in contact with tombs, which makes him another level of unclean for a Jew. And he was a Gentile, which means he's not keeping any of the purity laws. And what we know from later on in the story is he's also hanging out with pigs. So he's a Gentile who is naked and dirty, living among tombs and pigs. I mean, this guy has given the prodigal son a real run for his money. And let me pause real quick here as we move forward, because some of you may already be having this kind of conversation in your head. And that is, all right, when you say possessed by demons, what do you really mean by possessed by demons, right? And so let's just take just a couple minutes to address that. In Christian theology, in Christian history, there has been a wide array of ways of kind of interpreting that. Everything from the very, very literal, right? The image that you maybe have of like a little, you know, pitchfork and little, you know, nails and little physical demons. You can't see them, but they're actually literal demons kind of attaching themselves to people and kind of working people like a puppet, right? A very kind of literal. To what would be the kind of the most modern and maybe, I don't know what other term you'd use for it, most symbolic idea, which is, this is just a name back then in a pre-scientific era they gave for things that they couldn't identify, right? So if someone's having convulsions, we might have a diagnosis for them today. We might have medication for that. It might just be wiring in the brain, but for them, that meant there was a demon there, right? And we know they did some of that. We know that if someone was crippled, they would say things like, "Well, I wonder who sinned, him or his father," right? Because there's this kind of sense that the physical manifestations of what was happening with someone was directly correlated to the spiritual realm. And so you kind of have those two poles, right? And then you have a lot of stuff in the middle that you can kind of go anywhere on that spectrum. So allow me to say this to start off with. I genuinely don't care where you are on that spectrum, right? If you are a kind of total physical manifestation, like there is little physical demons out there that we just can't see, battling physical angels that we can't see, I'm fine with that. If you're the, this is probably a name for pre-scientific name for something they don't know, that's fine. And I believe, and I've been across that spectrum several times at different points in my life of interpreting and looking at scripture and experiencing things in my life. But wherever you fall on that spectrum, I think everything we're going to talk about tonight still applies. I would say that's actually kind of a moot point, okay? So just go ahead and get comfortable with wherever you fall on that spectrum, or if you're not sure where you fall on that spectrum, don't burn too many calories trying to figure that part out right now. You got time to do that later on, because it's not going to change really what we mean by this. So we have this naked man who's kind of the, you know, possessed by demons, whatever that means, in whatever way you want to interpret it, it's fine. He says this in verse 28. When he saw Jesus, he cried out and fell at his feet, shouting at the top of his voice, because what's more awkward than a naked man? A naked man at your feet, screaming at you, right? Shouting at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God?" Keep in mind, the disciples haven't even come to this conclusion yet, right? This is literally the most unlikely character in Scripture to make this proclamation in front of everyone, right? That even the demons know the name, right? Another kind of Lucan surprise here. "I beg you, don't torture me." 29, "For Jesus had commanded the evil spirit to come out of the man. Many times it had seized him, and though he was chained hands and foot and kept under guard, he had broken his chains and had been driven by the demon into solitary places." So apparently this town had worked with him, had tried to make concessions, had tried to figure out how to handle this guy that was kind of out of control, and none of it worked. It always drove him out into solitary places. which is what demons tend to do, however you want to interpret them. Apparently this town had made, again, all kinds of concessions. They kept him chained up, they kept him under guard. I don't know if he's one of those things that no one talked about or everyone talked about. I don't know if the kids snuck up and dared each other to get closer and then run away. I'm not sure what kind of town attraction he was or how well known he was, but they obviously had tried to work around him and tried to kind of manage him in some ways. And despite any effort, he ends up, again, where demons always take us, isolation. The demon's request of Jesus indicates that they know that Jesus is not going to make any such concessions with him, right? He's not going to try and manage the situation. He's going to try and jettison this situation. So 30, Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" I might want to drink out of the rice out of the cup there. "What is your name?" "Legion," he replied. Now, legion is a proper name. It's a Roman military term. A legion is 5,000, 6,000 Roman soldiers. Okay. "Legion," he replied, because many demons had gone into him. And they begged him repeatedly, so we get to kind of a plural here. They begged him repeatedly not to order them to go into the abyss. The abyss is one of those kind of scriptural terms. It's a little bit nebulous. It's in a few places. Bad spirits go there. I don't know how to tell you much more about it than that. They don't want to go. This is obvious, right? "A large herd of pigs was feeding there on the hillside. The demons begged Jesus to let them go into them. He gave them permission. When the demons came out of the man, they went into the pigs, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned." So here's a whole nother layer to the story for the original audience, because Jesus sends legion into the sea right here. And that is that's a battle cry for the Jewish people in these days, right? Because they're controlled by the Romans. The Romans have, you know, taxed them. The Romans rule over them. And so one of the things that you would see, this is like kind of one of those battle cries. One of the things that would have been said back there is, we need a Messiah who's going to drive the legion into the sea, right? And then we'll take our land back. So it's a very kind of important, loaded kind of phrasing that's going on here. And in fact, Jesus is driving the legion into the sea, just not the legion they want and not in the way they want. And he's helping the wrong people, which is what Jesus tends to do for people, right? Greatly disappoint them when they have expectations on them and even do things exactly the opposite of the way they want. But very kind of loaded phrase here. Because and what you'll see all throughout Jesus' ministry is everywhere that people kind of try to give flesh and blood to the enemy, to evil in this world, Jesus does not allow them to do that, right? And you know, the Paul tells us in Ephesians that our fight is not against flesh and blood, right? But against the powers and principalities, and however you want to define that. The powers and principalities, the idea, if it has flesh and blood, it's not actually your enemy, right? It's kind of what's behind there. Good thing to keep in mind during our election season, I think. You will not hear any candidate say that. So keep going. Chapter 8, verse 34. "When those tending the pigs saw what had happened, they ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they found the man from whom the demons had gone out, sitting at Jesus' feet, dressed and in his right mind. And they were afraid." They had an interesting kind of reaction to have to this guy that's been running around totally out of control, that should have been scaring him this whole time. Now he's quiet, clothed, sitting at Jesus' feet, and everyone freaks out. "Those who had seen it told the people how the demon-possessed man had been cured." So, tells them the good news. "Then all the people of that region of the Gerasenes asked Jesus to leave them because they were overcome with fear. So he got into the boat and left. The man from whom the demons had gone out begged to go with him, but Jesus sent him away saying, 'Return home and tell how much God has done for you.' So the man went away and told all over how much Jesus had done for him." Right? And so what you end up having here is the dirty, naked Gentile, unclean in every way, living among the pigs guy becomes the first missionary to the Gentile world. I talk about your unlikely trailblazer here. But what we see in this story, this is what I really want to get at tonight. Again, there's a lot of different layers of what's going on here. But what we see in this story is two basic postures towards the healing work of Christ, right? We see a life that has changed, a new disciple, one called to go home and tell, one who not just identifies who Jesus is, but asks, "Where do you want me to go? What do you want me to do?" Who follows Jesus. And you have the second group, which is fear. Fear from a group of folks who have seen something wonderful, seen something terrific, seen something mind-blowing, and yet still ask Jesus to leave them alone. So what we have in this story, I think, is a kind of line plainly drawn in the sand regarding this idea of lordship of Christ, this idea of understanding who Jesus is and what role Jesus plays in our lives. Right? Again, we have, I would argue, we have two different groups of people that are directed by something other than Jesus. They have other lords, to use scriptural terms, right? Arguably, by the definitions I'm going to use, everyone in this story, the people in the town and this person that's in the tombs, they've all got their demons. You have the one who is naked, uncontrollable, demoniac, living among the tombs. He's tortured by a legion of voices, like all kinds of different voices, compulsions, sicknesses, you fill in the blank, just a myriad of things that are telling him what to do and how to do it. He's pushed to the very edge of society. He's the first one everyone says no to. He is isolated and he is destructive and being destroyed himself, as all of us get when we're controlled by those other voices. And then we have these town people. And maybe they are townspeople who are lorded over by very respectable pursuits. They're not naked and running around and screaming and hanging out with the pigs. Maybe they're keeping the peace and trying to manage the situation. Maybe they're providing for their family through the livestock that's on the hill. Maybe they're separating the unwanted from normal society so everyone can live the way they want to live. They're not running around naked in the tubes, but they are listening to some voices. They're being led by something. And then both are confronted with the same thing, to follow Jesus or not to follow Jesus. To say no to these voices and yes to this one voice, or to ask this one voice to leave them alone. One person can no longer pretend that the demons aren't killing him, and the others have the luxury of not having to really own that. The others have the luxury of preferring the voices they know to the powerful healing voice that has just been demonstrated. They aren't looking for deliverance. They'd rather stick with the demons they know. Probably most fully manifest in the idea that this guy, they're not afraid of him until he's healed. They're more comfortable with the demon they know than the one they don't. And so as we do a lot here, I want to ask you kind of who you are in this story, right? Do you know your demons, however you want to interpret them? Are you painfully aware of the sound of those competing voices, of those things that pull you every direction that you know you shouldn't go, of those things that always bring isolation and fear and destruction? Are you so aware of them that you just long to get rid of them, to hear that other voice? Or are you more comfortable? Do you kind of like the voices you have? Are you comfortable with the voices you know, no matter how destructive they may end up being, how costly to the lordship of Christ they may end up being? Are they just the demons you know? Because you think about it, for these people, why did they ask him to leave? I mean, he just did this miracle in front of them, right? He just healed one of their big communal problems. They had a legion of demons in their midst. They see the demons get driven out of town. Now granted, it probably cost them some money, right? Those were somebody's pigs. So somebody's out some bucks and they're not happy about that. Maybe it cost them their town novelty, I don't know. Maybe something about having the kind of the freak show in the tombs was a part of their identity that they in some weird way liked. But why did they ask them to leave? Doesn't this seem like a moment when the entire town should be won over to Christ? Or is it possible that it's harder for the townspeople than it is for the naked guy running around with the pigs? In the same way, maybe it's harder for the older brother than it is for the prodigal son. Is it possible that we prefer to accommodate, to try and control the demons in our lives that we know, even though they pull us away from what we are really being called to by our Creator, rather than allowing God to remove them and replace them with a better voice? The folks had a naked, demon-possessed man living in their tombs, but they had him, you know, mostly under control. They knew how to deal with it. No one asked Jesus to cast the demons out of this guy. They had shuffled things around in their collective lives and accommodated the demons. They chained them, they guarded them, they basically learned to live with it. Does that sound familiar to anyone else? It certainly does to me. It's easy to do that. Especially if your demons aren't the real, blatant, loud, ugly ones. Especially if they're the ones that no one else can see. But then Jesus comes along and demonstrates an altogether different kind of power. Here's a power that cannot be controlled. Here's a power that does not ask for accommodation, but asks for reorientation, for rebirth. It may be good, but is also unpredictable, is demanding, and it's costly. Literally costly to at least one livestock owner, right? Which would you choose? I'm quick to pretend like I'd be on the side of the naked demoniac here, which is not a phrase I say often in my life. The truth is, I'm a lot more like the town people. Truth is, I have my demons I'd rather accommodate than exercise, because I don't quite know what life looks like without them. Let's define the demons, those legions of voices and compulsions and habits we all carry. What are those things? Those things that move us towards isolation, towards the destructive, away from the love and the mission of Christ. That relationship that I know I shouldn't be in, that relationship I know that is destructive. Deep down in my spirit, I know. But I'd just rather have the demon I know than be alone. I know I listen to that voice that tells me the more stuff I gather, then the safer I am, the more secure I am. I know that stuff doesn't really matter, but just gathering and paying for stuff and having a big bank account, you know, all this is just, I'm comfortable. I know this demon. It makes me feel empty. It makes me feel like I'm wasting my time, but I'm comfortable here. And what if God asked me to do something that's really costly? I know I'm not supposed to drink as much as I do, but what if I don't stop drinking and then I can't have fun? What if I don't know how to have fun and stay in control? What if I'm just more familiar with this demon? I can manage it. I know I shouldn't be looking at this stuff that I'm looking at on the internet, but what if, you know, what if things aren't going well with me and my wife, or what if, you know, I'm kind of lonely and I'm isolated? What if this, I'll stay with this demon that I'm more comfortable with. I know I shouldn't be so angry with others, with this world. What if I can't get motivated if I'm not angry? What if I've got no fuel left in my life if that's not what's driving me? I'll just listen to this voice because it's the voice I know. I don't know if those are yours specifically, but let's be honest about the fact that we all have our pet demons. Those voices in our lives, those compulsions in our lives, those things in our lives that we know keep us from the life that God wants for us and that we ultimately want. Those things we know keep us from that. But we've just learned to live with them. We've learned how to make them a part of our lives, and we're not quite sure how to live without them. It just makes us a little too scared. Besides, at least I know what to expect with these, right? If I really gave it over, if I really got rid of it, who knows what crazy thing God might want me to do? Who knows how many of my precious pigs he'll just chase right into the ocean? Christ seeks and wants what is good for our lives, what is full for our lives, what is loving and gracious for our lives. Christ seeks for us a life more abundant. And in order to have a life more abundant, I think all of us know on some level, in order to really have a life more abundant, it means we've got to lose some of the things that we've just gotten accustomed to having. But we can't forget, no matter how attractive they are, no matter how much they can try and convince us and pitch us and advertise for us and sucker us into thinking something otherwise, always when the demons get their way, it always ends in isolation and destruction. Always. And so we are left in front of this very peculiar call from Christ. Not just to identify him, because even the demons know who he is and shudder, right? But to follow. To let go of those things we know we should let go of. To forgo the voices that we are comfortable with in exchange for the one true voice that offers us abundance. I believe we are called to be a peculiar people who choose to name their demons and look and actively seek to have them removed instead of accommodate them. And here's what I know for my life, and I know for many of your lives and I've seen many times. When we have the courage or the insight or the conviction to finally own up to those voices, to allow those voices to be removed from our lives, it is almost always at that point we are empowered to go back to the very places where those demons first met us and shed a little light to those who are struggling in the same way. I mean, think about what it must have been like. Think about what it must have been like. I can understand if I was that guy, if I was the naked demoniac running around and Jesus healed me, I'd want to go with Jesus too. Can you imagine? I mean, I don't know, maybe you've had like a bad Thanksgiving meal with your family where you kind of stuck your foot in your mouth or, you know, showed your rear for some reason, not literally. I mean, maybe if you're possessed, you did, I don't know. And you don't want to really have to go back to the next one and own up to it and eat crow or whatever. Can you imagine for years being the naked demoniac that lived in the tombs and scared the crud out of everyone and then going, all right, well, got my clothes on now, let's walk back into town. Right? I mean, that's a scary thing. But what a story. I think Jesus sent him back there because he knew that that's kind of the one thing that changes a community, is that story. That I was blind, now I see. I don't know what else to tell you. You guys knew me before, you know me now. We are to be living those stories. Not pretend we're something we're not, to own the demons we've got, to seek their exorcism, and to live a new story and bring light to those who are struggling. Let's pray. Thank you so much for being here tonight. Again, if you're with us for the first time, we're especially glad to have you here. Just know that if you want to know more about this community, you can get us your information card. We'll add you to the email list. That's how we kind of keep everyone in touch with what's going on. Or if you have any gifts for the ministries of this community, then go in that box as well, and we will put them to good use. The school work we do at Hawkins, everything is run off of everyone's kind of generosity here. So we appreciate you being here. And just know that no matter who you are, no matter what's going on in your life, no matter how many demons you may be carrying around, you're welcome here. We're better off with you in the room. We hope we have you back. Don't forget about the announcements. Don't forget about the hospitality group is going to meet on the 28th. Let us know if you want to be a part of that. Sign up for the small group, Man and Mercy, that starts on the 29th. And don't forget Saturday, there's dinner, movie, and swim at the Krebs Place at 5:30. So bring side items and maybe some water and tea if you want to do that. Talk to Jerry if you know what you want to bring. But thank you for being here. And let this be, I know, first of all, just thank you for being here. I know on a rainy night in the summer, it's a lot easier to stay home than it is to come out, especially when you're going to come out just to have someone tell you that you're demon-possessed. But I know that's a hard pill to swallow, but thank you for being here. And as we leave this place, may we take comfort in the fact that whatever demons you have or are struggling with, you are in good company in this room. That we've all run naked among the tombs and the pigs. And so each one of us needs the mercy and grace of God. And each one of us has the opportunity for the abundant life that Christ has for us if we just listen to the right voices. So peace be with you. Have a great week.